And it's lights out and away we go once again. Welcome back to the Pit Straight. I am Alex Gintz, your sometimes host, sometimes guest, sometimes nowhere to be found. And I am joined today for a special three-way episode of the Pit Straight by Tom Blackburn and, for the first time, making his debut on the show, Mr. Michael Massey, who just came back from a what I can only hope was wonderful weekend covering the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach for the NTT IndyCar series. We've got plenty of that to talk about, but first, gentlemen, we have to kind of eat our vegetables before we get to dessert and talk about Formula One. And say it with me, Max Verstappen won in dominant fashion
Right.
from pole position after winning the sprint race. Fantastic. Next. But really, it's becoming a lot more of the same. We've talked about so much of this stuff on the show already. Daniel Ricciardo and Lance Stroll had a bit of a run-in, two drivers whose recent career struggles we've covered extensively. And American Logan Sargeant, whose career we haven't covered extensively, but perhaps has given us enough material to cover it extensively moving forward, had a terrible weekend himself, first having to start from the pit lane after his team swapped out his engine to experiment with the car, air quotes, and then was assessed a 10-second penalty for some questionable officiating, determining whether he was ahead of Nico Hülkenberg or not when a safety car came out. Sargeant was not told about that penalty until the end of the race. My question for you guys, so we can kind of get this F1 quota met as quickly and efficiently as possible, is Logan Sargeant being neglected or abused by his team? Tom, I'll open that up to you first.
Yeah, I'll say that the number two guys in Formula One are always kind of, down a peg compared to the number one guy. And obviously they got a pretty good talent there and an Albon. So, he's just kind of getting the short shaft there with just his treatment. And, I'm ready for him to fire him. If they want to go ahead and push him out the door, that's awesome. 'Cause then he'll be probably on a one-way ticket to IndyCar, and let's get that American over into American Open Wheel so guys like Massey can cover him at Long Beach.
Nice. I think they're not treating him very well right now, as you said. It sounds like one of those deals where anytime he complains about something on the radio, they're just like, "So, what do you want me to do about it?" It's like, not our problem. When like it should be your problem. Like, as long as you're together, shouldn't you be working together to get better, like until he's actually out the door? So that's very weird to me that they treat a driver like that who's could be on the way out.
And, unfortunately, for those of us who are very keen on seeing American talent in Formula One, the Sargeant's career in his second season hasn't really notably improved from his first season with Williams. And that's a tough spot for a driver to be in because a team like Williams, which was using an Excel spreadsheet to track the 400,000 components of their car at the start of this season, they've got this great talent in Albon, like Tom said. However, how much can you expect of any driver to come into an environment like that as a rookie and perform? I mean, I'm always a bit more lenient than I should be, perhaps, in a sport this competitive, but I don't think 2 seasons in a team, the state of Williams, is really a desirable litmus test for a driver's merit or deservingness of a position in Formula One. Do you guys agree, or am I just too much of a saint?
It's so challenging to kind of judge these guys. And I mean, there's dominating teams, and then there's teams like Williams who's running. Let's see, they finished 12th and 17th. You have no, I mean, that's just what, one, two, three, four, five spots between the teammates. I mean, how these guys are racing for mid pack. So are you going to end up expecting them to win to get points? I mean, that's just the challenge in Formula One in today's world, is you just don't know how these guys are going to compete every Saturday, Sunday, just because there's just such a discrepancy in who's got the best stuff and who doesn't. So, I don't know what to expect anymore from these guys, except you know, they're not going to win because Max Verstappen is going to do that every race. So that's all that matters.
Yeah, I like the patience approach as well. Like, especially when the equipment is not there, how are you going to expect a guy to outperform his equipment, you know, in any kind of series? But yeah, 12th and 17th is not that big of a difference. And also he had the penalty too. So like, that's probably a spot or two on the grid. So yeah, it's, you need to be more lenient with the guy. And like I said, work with him to get better and not be like, oh, you didn't show up and start winning instantly. Just, you're gone. Bye. You're dead to me.
You know, perhaps there's no bigger penalty, most damningly, there might be no bigger penalty than kicking your driver out of their own car because their teammate crashed their car. For sure. But yeah, other than that, like I said, Max Verstappen won the pole in qualifying, won the sprint, won the race. There was never really any challenge, and we move on and do it all again next time, most likely. So... Now that we've appeased the elite in the audience, let's move on to where the most of the fun was had in our group chats this weekend at the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, where Scott Dixon did that strange thing he tends to do and stretched fuel way beyond anything that should be mathematically possible to win the race in what ended up being pretty secure fashion over Joseph Newgarden and then Colton Herta. We've got plenty we could talk about in this race in terms of the contact between Herta and Newgarden, Dixon's superhuman, what would you call it? His superhuman passive driving, his driving at 50% and still being faster than everybody. I don't know what you would say. What's going on with Arrow McLaren and David Malukas, how it doesn't seem like they're ever really going to get their third driver back in custody from the healthcare system, and so on and so forth. But first, I'm curious, Massey, now that you have, you know, gotten your feet wet in the IndyCar pond, how was this experience for you?
Oh, it was a phenomenal experience. Like, I knew the Grand Prix of Long Beach was a big deal, and there were a lot of people, you know, heard that it was like the second most attended IndyCar race, but like none of that actually did it justice to just how wild it was, just how many people that were crammed. I mean, on Friday, it was packed. So like it just got even more crazy as the weekend went on. And like, there's cars on track from sun up to sundown. That's, I'm not exaggerating at all. There's so many different types of cars. So it's, you know, a car guy like our Jack Swansea's dream, something like that. But yeah, I couldn't have asked for it. And then I had to have a great race on top of that.
Yeah.
Like, even if it was a snoozer, it would have been a fun race to cover, but that was a really good race.
Given all the time that you've spent on the ground covering NASCAR for Front Stretch, what were the biggest contrasts that really stood out to you? I mean, was there anything that you think could have been done better or worse on the events part?
So the biggest difference was I successfully said paddock all weekend instead of garage, but I did keep saying hauler instead of transporter. So just one step at a time.
Straight to jail.
But yeah, the difference is, I would say, like, putting on as an event, like, I don't know. It's weird to compare because it's a street course as well. So the closest comparison I have is doing the Chicago street course for NASCAR last year. And it reminded me a lot of that, just the way like pit road was set up, and I don't know, just kind of walking around there, the vibes were very much the same, except for it wasn't a monsoon going on like it was in Chicago last year. Beautiful weather this whole weekend. As far as like the drivers, teams and stuff, the one thing I notice is that, but so they do their bullpen differently, where like NASCAR, they bring it in like the top 30 in points, And it like if some if everyone wants to talk to one guy, you'll have all the media around one guy. Whereas like the guy 30th in points, you could pretty much just walk up and get a one-on-one with. But IndyCar was more like they go station to station. So you could get them one-on-one, but you don't get them as long. So after a minute or two of talking to each person, they're kind of ready to move on to the next one.
Switching over to Tom for a bit before I throw a bonus question in for Massey after the next one. The contact between Colton Herta and Joseph Newgarden. It seems like pretty much everybody except Joseph Newgarden is in agreement, but penalty or no penalty?
That's a tough call because you kind of had a similar situation, right, in the Formula One race where Stroll went into the back of Ricardo, right? So, and he got penalized. So, yeah, God, it's a hard call because it did look pretty incidental. And keep in mind, that's the slowest section. And I bet they took this into account. That's the slowest section on the circuit. So when they all backed up and ran into each other, I mean, you're gonna expect that. It just ended up not working out for Newgarden because he hit him in that one spot that turned his gearbox into anti-stall. So the accidental contact just ended up being like the worst case scenario for Joseph. So he just and it really stung even more because you don't want to give up hardly any points to Scott Dixon at any point. And Jose, I'm sure, was thinking that too, that he ran away with that win and he was going to get two for two as the season started. So, I mean, I'm safe to say that IndyCar, yeah, that's, I think it was a good call, not a no contact penalty on that. But at the same time, people, I think Tim Cindric was radio in saying, well, I guess from now on, we're just going to go ahead and move people out of the way. I don't see that happening because IndyCar's race control is so inconsistent. They'll end up calling that the penalty next time. So I wouldn't worry about that either.
You want to be careful moving somebody out of the way in an open wheel car too,
Yeah.
for sure.
Paul Tracy would be the one that you need to talk to figure out how to do that. And he doesn't
Oh
drive
gosh.
anymore. So.
Well, maybe we'll get him on to talk about it soon. Staying on that, what about Scott Dixon? I mean, it's becoming not exactly concerning, but very confusing how frequently he's doing this fuel save thing. Is it kind of seems like there's really nothing to be done by anybody else other than just hope it goes wrong.
I know, like when he came in and pitted on lap 17, and as soon as he got around Will Power, that was the key because he had to get in front of him to be the leading car on that strategy. I just thought to myself, yeah, watch this. I bet he ends up winning this thing. It just ends up working out totally in jest. And it does end up working out. But I want to turn it around and say, is this something? This is the only way that he's going to win from here out. I mean, he's getting up there in age. He's getting older. Things going to slow down. Is this how he's going to be a championship contender? Is through strategy alone? Because if you look at his last four wins, three of them, fuel strategy. The other one was that bipolar race at Laguna Seca or Mazda Raceway that he ended up taking the victory. I mean, when was the last time he was up front and was dominating a race? Besides, he did lead 42 laps, but again, that was all fuel strategy that got him up there. So that's something to think about is this how this guy's going to stay and compete and win races? I don't know.
I did think that Newgarden was going to get around him too. Like he had caught him, had, I don't know how many, still had plenty of laps to get the job done. Like Newgarden should have won that race as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I mean, well, I guess once you get older, you got to start getting craftier and coming up with ways to win like that. But I did see one stat. He used all but 9 seconds, I believe, of his push to pass, and Will Power still had, who was on the same strategy, still had a bunch, like over 100. So, like, he just did that much better job of still, like, that strategy didn't work out for anyone else, but it worked out for him. He's like,
Kyle Kirkwood too, he ended up pitting a lap after Dixon and had way more push to pass left. So that's, I mean, he made up that one extra lap over Kyle Kirkwood and still did it. That's amazing.
that's crazy.
especially in the context of Although Newgarden, on pace should have won that race. Once he got to Dixon, all he had done was get to Dixon, and the same with Herta. It's not suspicious per se, but like Finley was saying in our Slack channel during the race, I guess to Tom's point, Finley said that a fox is most dangerous when it's cornered, and Scott Dixon might be at his best when he has no option to be anything else but his best. Does that really alleviate the concern that I kind of agree with, that when was the last time we saw Scott Dixon control a race outside of Indianapolis? Does it matter if he can be like this when he has no other choice, when he's put himself on death ground, per se?
I think he's, just relying on his team. And he has such a patient approach to how he runs his races. It's very Rick Mears-esque. If you ever learned about Rick Mears and how he ran his races, the only race where he seems to really want to get up front lately and lead every lap is at Indianapolis. And that has not worked out for him since at least the COVID race in 2020. But some of it too is because he hasn't qualified very well. I don't have any of the stats, but somebody had tweeted his last four wins were all besides this eighth where he started. He has actually been in double digit start positions in his last three previous wins. So he's been starting deeper in the field. So hard to pass. They turned to the strategy. So maybe it's just more of the team just like, hey, we didn't get you a fast enough car in qualification. So hey, let's do this to try and make sure you get up there and win. And if he doesn't, he's going to end up finishing second, third, or fourth. It's just freaking career. From now on, when I do the preview pieces, I'm going to put like some sort of disclaimer down there for my picks and say, this is all thrown out the window if Scott Dixon ends up going on an alternate strategy because I just can't stand it anymore.
Well, speaking of a team that needs to manage one of their cars, Arrow McLaren, they had a very strange weekend
Were they
at
in the
is.
race?
No, you won't. They were only in the paddock where you found them
Nice.
afterward.
Nice.
They had a very strange weekend where they still don't have David Malukas back in their custody. They've brought in Callum Ilott and now Théo Pourchaire to sub, and their dominant driver, their most marketable driver, their fastest driver, a lot of people would say, Pato O'Ward, ran into the back of Alexander Rossi unprompted in the fountain section, earned himself a penalty, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, and gifted Rossi a puncture in the rear to ruin his day. Meanwhile, Théo Pourchaire drove to an 11th place finish. You spoke to Théo after the race briefly, Massey. What is your impression of this team? Because this is a team that, based on their previous performance and based on all the numbers, should be right up there with Penske and Ganassi in controlling the series right now.
Yeah, from the perspective of like that's a blown opportunity for Pato and Rossi. Rossi didn't do anything wrong. He was just in the stack up, and it was like lap two or lap three. Pato just come flying in there and make some contact. But honestly, it looked much more grim around the halfway point of the race. Because both of them were running, like they were like two of the last three cars out there at the time, and Pourchaire had fallen back a little bit too, just because he was on a different strategy. But as the race went on, I give him credit. Those last 15 or so laps, in particular, Rossi and Pourchaire made some moves and got up to 10th and 11th. So it wasn't completely just a wash, but still, you look the top five for that race had all the major teams except for Aaron McLaren. So yeah, they need to step it up a little bit. But I will say, Pourchaire, I think he's got a bright future. Like the way he adapted, he was the biggest mover of the race, and he just seemed like a friendly kid and just happy, just thrilled to be there.
Tom, what about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking through all the stats for Arrow McLaren, and Man, I'm just wondering when things are going to click for these guys. I know they're trialed out a few drivers, you know, because of Malukas, but I mean, Rossi's got one podium with him over the last year and two races, and Pato just, he just sometimes ends up can't get it out of his way. He got a second at St. Pete, started the year strong, but I mean, he's kind of, you know, if he's just kind of had that ability to have that racecraft like Scott Dixon has and be able to just take care of his car and get to the finish, because he's their number one driver and they're just not turning results. Like, they are ingrained and embedded right there in that 10th place to 5th place realm. But they have not, and I wrote a story about this last year, they have not been able to get to be that third best team. And this is just an example of it where they end up just messing up and end up having this problem. And I mean, Rossi has got at least two top tens to start the year, but that's all he does. If you look at his results, he is like a 10th place. He's an 8th place finisher. He's 7th place. And these guys got to start leading laps, getting poles, getting up there and actually showing, you know, that investment in Pato of that, whatever it was, $5 million a year or something like that. I mean, come on, let's get this thing going. And it'd be good for IndyCar because, like Massey just said, yeah, all those fans out there waiting for, I mean, Pato is the top dog as far as fan favorite. And he's great for the sport. And that dude needs to be winning some races.
On the topic of Schrodinger's David Malukas, are we getting to a point? This is a prolonged absence for a mountain biking injury in the wrist. And I know there's had to be surgical intervention and whatnot, but are we getting to a point where, you know, McLaren is actually being pushed to start considering how these substitutes are performing as a whole versus the fact that they're getting their car out there and finishing the race every weekend?
I wonder how they're going to approach this, because this is a fascinating situation, because Malukas, I believe, is only have a 1-year deal. So, and it's not like they probably look at him as a top talent where they're going to be patient with him. So if he doesn't end up getting back in the car by Indianapolis, which is a big deal because he gets labeled as an oval master. So he needs to hit the ground running, the asphalt running. Mm-hmm. And that's a great track for him to do it. Then do they jettison on his contract and move on to someone else? And, you know, just like I just mentioned about them needing to get wins and such, how can you get wins when you're rotating drivers into one of your seats for whatever, six, eight races, depending on whoever long he's out? So this is kind of a worrisome territory, and it sucks for Malukas, right? Because you thought that that was going to be a great signing in the off season, and that he was going to be able to just compete and show that he has this talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it may not work out. And that is just a huge bummer.
Hey, I give him credit though. He was there at the race supporting the team. And when that crowd was out there waiting for Pato, he's a smart guy. Malukas is a smart guy. He went out there and started signing some autographs and appeasing the crowd. It's a good way to get his name, his brand out there. But yeah, it's not a good sign to just be missing this long over an injury you wouldn't think would keep you out that long. But I guess, the wrist is pretty important to driving, I imagine. Sure. So, but yeah, I wonder, it sounded like, I believe they said on the broadcast that if he doesn't go at Indy, they might put Tony Kanaan in the car. And if that happens, yeah, I just don't see a situation where any of this ends well for Malukas unless he's like out there driving very soon. So yeah, that's, you miss time, all of a sudden your seat becomes somebody else's. You want to rush back before you're healthy, but I just wish him a speedy recovery.
Sure. And you know, there's always the possibility that Chip Ganassi Racing claims him, and then he denies it, and then he ends up in court with
Yeah,
everyone.
they him and Pelot can share lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. It's like carpooling. Well, guys, I think that is just about all the time we have. It's awesome to finally have more than one person on here at once. I know that that probably helps spread all of the static that comes out of my mouth around a bit, makes it a bit more bearable for everybody. For those of you who are listening who might want more open wheel content or more front stretch content in general, we are on the web at frontstretch.com. You can get all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on the app formerly known as Twitter at FrontStretch and our open wheel content at FS Open Wheel. And Massey, where can people find you on that app who shall not be named?
At M underscore Massey 22. Hey, don't forget we got an open wheel YouTube page now too that we just launched this past weekend.
Yes, we do.
Front stretch open wheel. Look it up on YouTube.
And Tom, how about you for that app that nobody can keep straight?
At Tom Blackburn 42.
All right, and I am on that app at AlexGintz1. And this week, stay tuned wherever you get your podcasts because we have plenty of other great content dropping on the Front Stretch Podcast Network.